Good afternoon. The meeting will come to order. Members, please remember to turn your microphone on when answering roll call. Ms. Kimberly, please call the roll.
Chair Duggan.
Present.
Vice Chair Abbott.
Here.
Ranking Democratic Member Hanshofsky.
Here.
Representatives Anderson.
Here.
Benjamin. Barrero.
Here.
Batana.
Here.
Kennedy.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Franklin.
Present.
Griffiths.
Here.
Clayton.
Here.
Rudman.
Here.
Steele.
Here.
Stevenson. Tant.
Here.
Temple.
Here.
Tremont.
Here.
Woodson.
Here.
Thank you. A quorum is present. As a reminder to everybody, please remember to silence your electronics. As a reminder to members, please remember to turn your microphones on and off when speaking. Welcome back. Seems like we were just here. We are pretty much the same committee with one exception. We have a new vice chair, Representative Abbott. Welcome. We're pleased to have you with us and joining in this important work for the state. Would you like to say anything?
Thank you for having me, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to continuing on some great work and moving this agenda forward for Florida. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. And I'm pleased that we have the same ranking member, my friend, Christine Hanshofsky. Thank you. Welcome back. And would you like to say anything?
Thank you, Chair. I'm happy to be back and doing the work for the people of Florida.
Thank you very much. And last but not least, I want to recognize our former vice chair, Rep. Fabricio, who is fortunately, very fortunately for this committee, still with us. And congratulations on your new subcommittee chairmanship. It's a pleasure to have you here. Finally, I want to recognize a new staff member that we have with the committee. Daniela Herrera has joined us from FIU. She's going to be working on workers' compensation, motor vehicle, and non-property lines of insurance. Welcome aboard. We're glad to have you here. All right, members, we'll have a presentation today from Insurance Commissioner Michael Jaworski from the Office of Insurance Regulation. Commissioner Jaworski, you are recognized.
Thank you very much, Chair. It is a tremendous honor to be able to be here today to provide an update on our property insurance market. I'm going to start off just with a quick demonstration of what Florida operates under a bifurcated insurance regulatory mechanism, and so I always find it's helpful to frame the discussion in a way that outlines what various parties are responsible for what in the state of Florida. So just really quick, the Department of Financial Services is responsible for insurance agents and agencies, insurance consumer services, insurance fraud and law enforcement, workers' compensation administration, and rehab and liquidation. The Office of Insurance Regulation is responsible for providing certificates of authority and other licensure mechanisms for insurers and insurance-like entities to operate in the state. Product review, which includes the review of property forms, property, life and health, basically all, many lines of insurance forms and their rates. Market regulation, which is the market conduct aspect of insurance regulation, monitoring the behavior of insurance companies. And then finally, financial oversight or the solvency of insurers throughout the state of Florida. One of the things I wanted to highlight today was the recent steps that the legislature has taken to bring stability and improvement to our ailing property insurance market. I'm going to start with one of my favorite ones, which was Senate Bill 7052. It's a favorite for a couple of reasons. The first one is because I was actually here to help be involved in that process and to provide any insight I could to the legislature as it was going through the process. One of the biggest things it did was enacted various consumer protections and strengthened the OIR's authority to regulate insurance entities. By way of example, prior to Senate Bill 7052, the office was not necessarily able to quickly and efficiently move an insurer into a more supervised state or take action against an insurer, but with the passage of 7052 came along with that the adoption of the Hazardous Financial Condition Model Law, which allows us to act in a much quicker way. It also strengthened OIR's ability to monitor claims handling and adjustment practices in a much more proactive way. One of the best examples of that is the requirement of an attestation by the company itself that it has the resources on the ground to adequately handle whatever may be coming its way, especially during a catastrophe. And that's directly responsive to, I think, the number one complaint I've heard on the ground from consumers is they'll have a lot of back and forth with their insurer about what's going on and what the status of their claim is, will be told over and over again that my claim has been handled by 15 adjusters, and I never have the same person on the phone twice, or I never have, and I've submitted the same documentation 5 times. All of this was designed to drive and get at that particular problem. Especially in the property space, you're often dealing with someone who has lost some of, basically their whole life has become upended. And it's important that there's a consistent communicator between the insurer and the property owner. And that's one of the key things that 7052 was designed to create. I also want to thank you, the legislature, for allotting an additional 29 positions to the market conduct section within OIR. I think it was an area that definitely needed additional resources, and I'm grateful that you provided it. Some of that will be going into the life and health section to administer the PBM space. A lot of it will be going into the market conduct space for PNC, and then there'll be a division, a section of it that will go to an analytics team that is devoted to working that particular, working on data, analyzing data that comes into the office so that we can better monitor insurer performance. I also want to highlight just in the crowd right now, Cheryl Parker right there is a former, is a Marine, never say former, she is a Marine. She is our new Deputy Commissioner of Market Conduct. We established a new position within the Office of Insurance Regulation that broke out, formerly the market conduct sections where each one was in life and health, one was in PNC. We've broken that out, elevated it up to a Deputy Commissioner level to better facilitate the tracking and monitoring of insurance company behavior. It's an elevated position, and I think it's an important one that needs to be monitored closely. Going down the list, I think everyone's been here, but I'll just touch on a couple of the ones that are also important throughout this. House Bill 837, which modified the bad faith framework within the state of Florida, geared towards in a similar vein to elements of House Bill 2D and 2A, was designed to restore rationality in our legal spaces and bring not to restrain someone from attaining counsel, but make sure that when they're doing so, this is a well thought out and deliberative process, and that everyone is aware of the likelihood of success within that framework. And I think that we're seeing initial signs that that is beginning to pay off, which I'll go into in a little bit. House Bill 799 is one that sometimes didn't necessarily get a ton of attention during the legislative session, but it was very important. It did a number of things along with 7052, one of which, and when we're in this space, we're talking about mitigation steps and mitigation credits that homeowners can attain or on their own secure so that they can harden their homes against catastrophic events. So 799, if any of you have ever bought a house, one of the forms you likely saw was an OIR form. That is the form that you have an inspector go through your home and identify any areas of your home where you might be able to get a mitigation credit on your insurance for various things in your home, such as hurricane cliffs or other strengthening technologies in the house. That form has not been updated since 2009. There's a lot of reasons why it probably hasn't been updated since 2009. It took a number of years to get it done, but we're now 13 years past that, and it was certainly time, in my view, for OIR to go ahead and undertake that process. This bill actually requires it, and so we are all in 100% alignment and agreement that that is a process, that is a form that should be updated to do a study and look at additional measures against wind mitigation that the homeowner can take or has taken that is worthy of a uniform mitigation discount credit. Another thank you to the legislature throughout this was allowing us to establish a position within PNC product review, which is going to be, we'll see where it lands ultimately, but it is an engineer-like position. And one of the reasons we felt like that was necessary is we want to be able to encourage companies to come forward with mitigation credits of their own design to provide a credit to homeowners if they select that insurance policy. And so the law allows that, generally speaking. One of the challenges we've had in the past when companies have come forward to us is that they have not been able to provide we have not necessarily had the resources on hand to be able to evaluate that properly and make sure that it is actuarially sound and ready to go. Long term, we hope that that will become a bit of a test bed area where we can begin to monitor future changes to the wind mitigation credit program, but also come up with some of our own ideas and explore our own ideas that might go into that may be beneficial down the road. So it's one part engineer, one part coordinator. We think it will over time pay big dividends for the state of Florida. I won't go too far into 2D and 2A because we've had great discussion about that all throughout the session. And in meeting with a lot of you, I think it's pretty clear that that the memory of the passage of those bills is fresh in everyone's mind. But the overall effort of that was to stabilize the property insurance market. I'm going to go into details on some data that we have that's emerging that shows that that is paying off and having the impacts that we hope to have. But time is something that is a factor in practically anything that the legislature does to affect entire markets. Time is almost always a factor, and we'll get into some explanations for why we are there today. So just real quick, I talked about this a little bit earlier. We appointed the Deputy Commissioner of Market Regulation. We are in the process of working with our partners at DFS to get those full-time employee positions established. The Financial Services Commission, which is the governor and cabinet wearing that hat, has approved over 32 rules related to the establishment of the requirements of all of these bills, and the which includes everything from the requirement of claims handling manuals to another little fan favorite of mine within the legislation in 7052 was the requirement that when a company begins to suspend temporarily writing new business in the state of Florida, that that OIR creates a very clean and quick portal to allow them to notify us of that fact. Oftentimes, I remember last year, 4 weeks into the job, we started getting these emails, and people around the Capitol were running around saying that I won't name the company, but X company was no longer going to be writing in Florida, and the thing they had was an agent notice to a particular agent to say that's what's happened. So we spent about half a day trying to hunt it down. We talked to the company. They didn't understand it. They had no intentions of leaving the state, and it turned out that the agent notice was for 12 policies on a legacy plan that they were just discontinuing over time. And so in this space, accurate information is critical. I'm a huge fan of just not putting rules around necessarily when someone can stop writing or which programs they can continue and discontinue, but it's very important that the office is aware of it, and so we're very happy to see that come along. I already went into the updating of the Uniform Mitigation Verification form, and one of the things that we're hoping to do in the near future that I didn't necessarily go into is exploring techniques beyond just wind mitigation that can help consumers find not only harden their homes against various perils, but also allow for mitigation credit. There's technology that exists today and building type technology that exists today to protect against other perils such as water loss. There's technology that will, if a system detects that an individual home is utilizing too much more water than is typically prevalent within that home, it'll automatically cut it off, the water supply off, and allow someone to require a person actually go in and look and see if that's what is happening there and make sure that there isn't a leak somewhere. And so that could be a valuable mitigation system that's not just wind, but something else, another peril that consumers, if they have that, they should be getting credit for it. So we're going to be spending a bit of time in the future exploring things like that as part of that engineering program. So to go into a little bit, and this is kind of the beginning of what we've seen in the past year since the passage of the legislation. OIR has had 5 new companies complete the application process. That application has been reviewed, and it has been ultimately approved to operate within the state of Florida. Those companies are well capitalized. We were really pleased with the management structure of them, the people that they brought on board. One thing I said last week and to the other committee, and I'll say it again this week, is that this is what we're looking for in this scenario. We want capital to come into the state. We need capital to come into the state, but this is not the wild, wild west. We want people that are coming into the state that have a real interest in running a business that is true to the being involved in the business of insurance. And it is important that there's a solid vetting process. I like the vetting process we have established as we go through this, but we're also periodically going to go in and do a bit of a wellness check on these new companies to make sure that they're in a friendly way, the friendliest way you can. A regulator can knock on a door. It's going to be as friendly as possible. We're going to knock on the door and just look and make sure that they are doing what they should be doing, offering advice if they aren't doing what they should be doing, but working hopefully in a collaborative way to make sure that those companies get off from the ground up in the right direction, moving in a way that improves our market and protects our consumers. Last thing I would just quickly mention is I've had meetings with one of my goals when I first started this job was to get with as many national carriers on a one-on-one basis and get and have a meeting as far up the chain as I possibly could. And when we speak about national carriers, what I like to call them is the Super Bowl companies, because they're just about every third ad within our when you're watching the Super Bowl. I think it's the Jake from State Farm, and there's an ostrich in the mix somewhere, and so you see all these various things out there. So I wanted to have a discussion, because what we've had over the past several years is a decrease in their overall not all of them, but some of them have generally decreased their participation in our market, and I wanted to have a discussion with them about what we could do that we're not doing, or just generally assess their interests following the changes that have taken place to bring them back into our space and get them riding in Florida. We've had some good discussions. One of the discussions that ultimately led to State Farm issuing a statement that they not only will not leave the state of Florida, but they plan on continuing to grow within the state of Florida. And I think that if you take a look back, we won't go into it right now, but it's been a somewhat complicated relationship with some of our national carriers. I think them coming and saying that they're staying and not leaving is a very good sign of how they view the market, the regulatory framework that the legislature has set up and is being executed. It's a good sign, and hopefully one that other companies will follow. I've met with the CEO of Travelers now twice to try and have discussions about what we could do either administratively or legislatively to bring more interest in that company coming. And it was, the first meeting was at my request, the second was at his. And so we're having collaborative discussions in that space around what we can do to bring those national companies in. The bottom line answer is these are huge national companies. They make decisions that come over the course of years, not months. And so it could be a long-term project to get that interest in, but we are absolutely trying to bring them into this state. Citizens takeouts. One of the things that is important to note within Citizens takeouts is that, in my view, it is not depopulating Citizens in and of itself is not the thing that will bring about a healthy market. It is a fantastic indicator of a healthy market that we're reducing the risk on the state, that private firms are taking that risk up, but it is not the end-all be-all of we've depopulated Citizens, so now we have a very healthy, vibrant market to look at. Notwithstanding that, it is a sign, the growth that we're seeing right now, which is up 800% of requests for Citizens takeouts from the private market, is up 800% from last year to this year. That's substantial, and that equals to roughly 646,000 policies have been requested to be taken out by private carriers of the Citizens program. And that's just in the past, really the last quarter of this year. To caveat what a request is, it is the first step along the way when a company wants to take policies out of Citizens. They come to OIR, they provide a number, we look at that number, we compare it to their financial condition, we compare it to their market conduct activities that may be going on, and then we ultimately make a determination that could either allow for that or modify it or deny it outright. So we've accepted 646,000. We haven't denied any yet. We haven't seen any that merit concern. We've allowed what's been requested to go out there. I will note that we did modify in the most recent order. There was, after discussions with Citizens, we saw where some companies were making takeout offers to consumers that exceeded 300 to 500% of the cost of what they were paying with Citizens. And with the opt-out provision, if a consumer happened to not be noticing that was going on, they would wind up paying up to 300% more for their insurance. So with the latest order approving those takeouts, I did include a cap of 40% that they cannot make an offer that is 40% over the Citizens offer due to those items that the various carriers were engaging in. But we're seeing good space here. I think it's important. I think the biggest takeaway from this is that we're seeing that private interest come into the state. We're seeing companies that have begun to recapitalize and are riding both in an organic way through their producers, and we're also seeing this legislative mechanism of a bulk takeout of private risk from a public entity to a private entity taking place, and it's generally a good sign of where the market is going. This, if you've been on this committee for a while, you've probably seen this a time or two. This is just to provide an update of what the market has looked like over time, broken out by its various segments. One of the things I went into earlier, right now we see a citizens. It's not quite at its high watermark, but it's close. When I got into this job, I honestly, the first day looking at things, I thought a success story for the year in my head was citizens staying under 2 million policies. And so looking at the financial condition of companies, where the reinsurance market was on those days, and we'll talk about reinsurance in a second, but it was a pretty difficult situation with a lot of uncertainty around how quickly the impact of the legislation that you all passed would come into effect. The other thing I just want to highlight here is if you take that dark blue bar, so just to give you an example, the tan bar is surplus lines, the light blue bar is Citizens market share, and then the dark blue bar is what we call the admitted market, or insurers that are regulated by the Office of Insurance Regulation. Just to ping back to that prior conversation about national carrier participation, national carriers used to make up a much higher percentage of that dark blue bar than they do today. And so it's very important that we work to try and get them back in this market over time, because what's taking place now is, if you just look at any other state, say Nebraska, if you look at that market, what you typically see is those five large Super Bowl carriers are riding about 70 to 80% of that market overall. And then there's about 20, 30%-ish that are either smaller regional carriers or state domestics only carriers that are riding the remaining amount. In Florida, it's nearly the opposite right now, where you have about 70 to 80% of the market, probably 50, 60% of the market with Citizens, is being written by the state domestic insurance companies, and a minority of that is being written by those national companies that are well capitalized and have risks offset throughout the country and in some cases around the globe. And so it's something to pay attention over time, is to make sure that we have a well-balanced admitted market that is spreading that risk not only among our state domestics, but has that national carrier participation. This is just a quick reminder that we've continued to, even throughout all this, we've continued to see growth within the admitted market, and that's going back, that's the dark blue bar. Even with the uptake in Citizens policies and the various ups and downs that we've seen within the surplus lines industry, Florida's admitted market has continued to grow, which is just largely a reflection of the growth of Florida. And I just wanted to make the point that we, even in the past several years during this trouble, we've seen growth within this market. This chart, this pie graph is something that we had built out, and I want to make a couple of points about it. It is a breakout of a rate filing in very simplified terms. When the office gets a rate filing, it can be upwards of 1,000 pages of actuarial data and other support information. But I wanted to break this out in a way that demonstrates where your premium dollars are going as it is reflected by large categories. And so one thing to point out is that every single company, this pie chart would look different for every company. It's not a uniform thing where they all represent this. Another thing to point is that you'll see the things that in the top quadrant will change quite a bit depending on the performance of the company. But I wanted to highlight that reinsurance costs, one of the reasons why reinsurance is so important in Florida is because of this, what you're seeing in this pie chart here, where it's responsible for, when it comes to the cost of insurance for consumers, it's responsible for at least 30% of what is being collected by that insurance company. The insurance company X goes out to market in Florida, it's generally in the spring. They go and meet with reinsurers through brokers. They negotiate some sort of transaction. The reinsurers go very deep into the workings of the company, look at everything from management to the risk profile of the risk pool that they have, and they generally make offers or a series of offers, and ultimately there's a lot of debate back and forth on what the ultimate cost would be. But that's making up, and every, like I said, every company would be different. At least 30% of what consumers pay today is going to that reinsurance cover due to our catastrophic exposure and the social inflation that Florida experienced over the past several years. The next biggest category, or a slightly bigger category, is the non-hurricane loss and LAE. And so that category combines two things, but it's all around claims. And these would be things outside of a hurricane. So if you have a claim, you, you get paid for that claim, whatever the expenses of that claim and handling that claim go into that bucket right there and is reflected in a future rate filing. And the same thing below that where you see the average annual hurricane loss in LAE of 18%, that's your estimated hurricane losses. When you go into hurricane losses, I just wanted to make the point that when you're looking, it's a combination of what you're projecting in the future when you're making a rate filing. It is a combination of near-term past experience with very sophisticated modeling that goes on through computers and other technology. Florida is, I think it's a very good thing, Florida is the only state in the country that has a modeling commission that actually reviews these models and decides whether or not they're fit to be in Florida. So they actually break those models down and look at them and evaluate their soundness. You see premium tax is a small percent, the remaining corners is commissions, administrative, and then the profit and contingency factor. Profit and contingency is, there is a limit established by rule by the Office of Insurance Regulation of how much an insurance company can make on pure profit and contingency. It's profit and contingency because that's also a bucket where if things go askew, that's the first pile that they pull out of to make the pie correct on the actual experience. There are some companies that we allow to go over 4%, but that's in situations where they've had a long-term success or financial rate. They're still offering their product that is not inadequate, excessive, or unfairly discriminatory. This is just the loss trends of our domestic property insurers over the past several years. And just a few points I would make, you see the golden era that sort of began in the latter half. This is what I call the domestic insurance market golden era for Florida. You have that extraordinarily profitable period between 2012 and 2015, where it seemed like we had kind of cracked the puzzle. Reinsurance rates were at an all-time low globally. The issues around litigation in the property space, by the best data we have, had not yet emerged. And we had tons of capital flowing in to the state in the form of people looking to form companies, engage in the insurance market in some way. And so it was just, and we hadn't had a catastrophe impact Florida for several years at that point. So it seemed like a really good time. Then beginning around 15, the office began to hear reports of AOB water losses. And so we did data calls. We established that there was at least some disruption taking place within the marketplace around AOB and litigation and water losses that was taking place at the time. 2017, we experienced the first hurricane that the state had experienced in over a decade at that point, a major hurricane event. And I would point out that when you speak with reinsurers, they will point directly at Irma as something that not only disrupted Florida's insurance market, reinsurance market, and the availability of reinsurance in Florida, but it disrupted it globally. And it did that, one of the biggest reasons why it did that is because the losses were so far off due to social inflation factors that it doesn't take much. In the insurance space, certainty is cost. And so when you think you have something figured out and it turns out that was wrong, the higher the wave of disruption, the more uncertainty in the future, the harder it's going to be to obtain capital. And so in Irma, we had at the time a window of 3 years for an individual to file a claim following a hurricane. We had over 60,000 claims filed in year three alone, 1.1 million claims total for Irma. It impacted most of the state, and the social inflation factors that existed at the time were simply not factored into either what the insurers anticipated to take place or the reinsurers anticipated to take place. And that began to harden Florida's property insurance market. You can look beyond Irma and you can see that the situation began to deteriorate further. Looking forward past 2017, over that course of time, losses were significant. 13 property insurers, domestic property insurers in the state of Florida went insolvent during that time. There were others that the office went to great lengths to avoid insolvency by a merger or some other action that took place to provide that company with the capital it needed. And this is, of course, a period of time where rates were, as they are now, were on the upswing. I'd also just point out the up to 2023 of quarter two, the companies have, while the situation, I spoke at the very beginning about how we have data that shows that things are improving, The losses the companies have incurred this year so far is significantly less than the losses that it has experienced in the immediate prior years. And so we see a lot of good in that. It's not where we'd love to be, where we see a responsibly profitable insurance entity, but it is moving in the right direction generally. So reinsurance is another space that we've talked about a little bit. And just going back real quick to that prior chart, over those years where you see those dramatic losses within insurance companies is the same period where these companies, our Florida domestic insurance companies, experienced rate increases for reinsurance that went between generally 50 and 60% year-over-year increases again and again. The first day I got on the job, the staff brought me a document that listed out all of our domestic property insurers and what their financial condition would be if we had another reinsurance cycle like that where increases were between 50 and 60% above what they were paying in the year prior. And I can tell you it was a very, very, very dire image of what those companies, where those companies would be in 2023. The good news is that, well, I'll say this, we began a bit of a, not a marketing campaign, but we went about in concert with the governor's office and we met with 213 representatives of different reinsurers over this course of time to inform them of the changes that took place, to recognize that while reinsurance is a data-driven process, anywhere they can lean in on the promise of the future and a better market going forward, that we asked them to do that. And the end result, I'm not saying that changed anything, but that's just something we did. The end result of that was an average increase of 27%. And so that's nothing to, we didn't pop the champagne, no one celebrated necessarily, that's still a lot, but it is less than half of what the worst case scenario was estimated to be, which we view as a positive sign. I've since had discussions one-on-one with a number of reinsurers to talk about not only what the legislation that's taken place, but also what their plans are in the future. I would categorize it as cautious optimism within the marketplace that Florida is turning the corner and moving in the right direction generally when it comes to its insurance market. The larger discussion is going to continue to be for some time that reinsurance will, if you look at a company's catastrophic tower, you'll see you have the cat fund that sort of sits in the middle of that tower in a very good spot, and then you have above the tower and you have below the tower. Reinsurance is going to be pretty available at a fairly reasonable price, hopefully an improving price, for companies seeking to fill their tower above the cat tower. The challenge will remain for some time, although we met with a couple of companies that are very bullish in that space. There are some companies that indicate they don't want to operate in that space anymore. It's going to be more challenging below that cat fund tower going forward for the foreseeable future, because that's the very first area of capital that is hit when a catastrophic event takes place in the state. And I just want to highlight that after all that, a lot of concern, every single one of our carriers were able to find full reinsurance cover for this year. One thing that's been asked about quite a bit by the legislature is the status of the Property Claims Litigation Report, or the PCLR. That was a requirement that went in with Senate Bill 76, and it's probably the most advanced data call that the office has ever run. There's no other state in the country that does one like it. This past year was the first year of putting it through. And what it does, essentially, is it captures the complete life cycle of every single property claim that closes in that calendar year, from the initial offer, what the loss was, final offer, settlement if there's an attorney, the attorney's name if they're involved, the vendor's names that were involved, and provides a pretty clear picture of what has taken place in the calendar year for claims in the state of Florida. It's providing a lot of data. We are probably going to issue a very full report during the towards the end of this month or the first part of the month following. The simple fact is it's been a lot of data. We've had to communicate with the carriers a number of times about the veracity of their data. We've had to vet the data. We've had to go through it as carefully as we can. But I did want to provide some information today to this committee about where we stand now. One of the first things that becomes apparent when you look at these two competing images of Florida is you see closed claims on the left. The lighter bluish teal color is a low propensity for closed claims, and the kind of the more yellow or red it gets means a higher propensity for closed claims. On the right, the state of Florida is a propensity of those claims being litigated. And so you can immediately see, when you look at that disparity there, you see that overall the state of Florida is mostly teal. There's a tremendous amount of litigation energy in South Florida generally. And the number breakdown is that the percentage of claims that were litigated in the tri-county area was about 1 in 4 or 27% of claims versus the entire state, which is 9% of claims. If you just took out the tri-county versus the rest of the state, it is 27% versus about 5% as a statewide average. You see a little bit of uptick along the I-4 corridor with an average of about, in the solo counties, with an average of about 9% of those claims litigated. The data that is coming back, there's some good data that we'll use for a number of purposes beyond just informing the legislature and the public. Some of it will be used for market conduct analysis. Some of it will be used to investigate, for example, companies with high propensity of litigation. We will investigate whether or not there are reasons for that, beside just market forces engaged in the process with claims handling. But the overall take is that, one of the takes is that we see both the truism that if you litigate your claim, it takes a lot longer for that claim to close. And the longer a claim is open, the more likely it is to be litigated. We'll have some data towards the end of the month that shows the average time to close a claim is generally statewide within the requirements of the old law, which would have been that prompt pay statute at 90 days. But there are certainly some instances where it exceeded that. And we will be able to demonstrate the differential on average of the cost of a litigated claim in that LAE space versus a non-litigated claim. And so when we get, just going back real quick to that LAE at the bottom of this chart here, that is your loss adjustment expenses. And so that includes everything from adjusting a claim, there's litigation involved in the claim, all that goes into that bucket. So the higher the propensity of the cost to close a claim, the more is going to go in that next cycle to estimate what your future rate need is based on your experience that you just had. So if you have a litigated claim that just, for example, is 8 times more expensive or 5 times more expensive, 3 times more expensive, whichever number one to cite here, you will have, versus a non-litigated claim, which would be your base average, all of the cost of that litigated claim is going to go into the estimate of your future claims in some way. Just to, obviously, Hurricane Idalia and Hurricane Ian are on everyone's mind, given the impacts of those two storms. I just wanted to provide some basic information about those. When Idalia hit, the office issued an emergency order to suspend the non-renewal cancellation of insurance policies in the affected region for both events. For Hurricane Ian, it also included a suspension on the increase on rate changes. For Idalia, as of October 5th, there were 22,763 claims total reported by insurance companies, and the percent close is about 60.9%. And Hurricane Ian, so far we're at about 758,000 claims, and the percent close that's being reported by companies is 90.2%. I always want to say, when we talk about closed claims, there's that 10% window that, if you tell that to them, they wouldn't believe it for a second, and I don't want to overshadow what they're experiencing by just saying this is a success story. We are actively looking into companies as reports come to us of activities that would be in violation of Florida law, and we are also about to begin another series of market conduct exams that was part of Senate Bill 7052, as we're required to evaluate the performance of carriers following these events. Private flood. So there's been tremendous energy around the flood program in general, especially in response to following Hurricane Ian, where flood insurance became such a relevant factor as to whether or not you had it due to the storm surge and other events in that space. One of the things that I would like to highlight around that is the fact that Florida in 2017 or 16, I can't remember off the top of my head, I apologize, kind of led the nation by creating its own private flood market marketplace that was available for anyone to acquire flood insurance. The ultimate idea would be that we would have carriers within our state that would possibly sell the flood insurance on its own, but ideally would include it as a rider or some sort of endorsement on a homeowner's policy, the ease of the homeowner. You could have all of that in one. We've seen some success in that space, and we've seen some pullbacks from that space, but right now we stand at a generalized growth of the private flood insurance market over the course of the past several years. Obviously, that's important. There's a lot going on in that space, and it can be difficult to establish that space, but I think over time it will continue to grow and stabilize. But the NFIP makes flood they dominate that market in a lot of senses, and with risk rating 2.0, which basically changed the way that the federal government evaluates the risk that they're writing, I think we have an opportunity here to continue to see growth in this space. And this just gives a generalized chart of the overall dynamic of the private flood market over the past several years. Generally a good growth pattern. We see a spike in 2020 and then a decrease, but we're now growing again. And with that, I'll, with the chair's permission, I'm happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. I appreciate that very detailed report. We do already have some folks in the queue. Representative Woodson, you are recognized for a question.
For your presentation. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. You got me. Thank you again for your presentation. We really appreciate you. Can I be recognized for two questions, Mr. Chair?
You may.
Thank you very much. My first question has to do with page 6, I believe. You say you have approved 5 property and casualty insurance to enter the market, which is good. We're glad that you're bringing some more insurance in order for our people to get access to insurance. Is there anything, prior to approval, is there anything in the contract that stipulate anything? Let's just say if we went to what we went through again and we had to put money in the market, is there anything in the contract that stipulate that they stay in Florida, that they cannot leave prior to a certain period of time?
You recognize?
There's nothing in the approval process that would require them to stay within the marketplace. I would highlight that there is generally two exit strategies, though. Either the company would leave generally because they're losing money, or it would leave because they become leaving would be equatable, I think, in some cases to their insolvency. So at which point the Department of Financial Services would look to recover any cash or assets that it potentially could. As part of under the laws of Florida.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can I have a follow-up to that question
before
I ask my other questions? Thank you, sir. In light of what happened, do you think that would be something that you would be willing to consider to include in the contract prior to approval in order to make sure they don't leave after they get the money?
You recognize?
Thank you, Chair. It's a delicate balancing act when we're talking about attracting capital into the state. So we want a regulatory framework that assures consumers that they have a product that they can believe in, that will be there for them on their worst day. We want to balance that with a fair regulatory framework that makes people feel confident that they can invest capital in the state and make a profit over time that serves everyone's best interest. So it would depend on the language specifically that we would require when we're talking about programs such as RAP or participation in the CAT fund, what they're buying for that period of time. They're not necessarily receiving capital injections at that point. What they're buying into a program, especially the CAT fund, that provides coverage for a calendar year. So there isn't always capital to pull back and ensure that Florida gets its fair share back. In another scenario, such as a surplus note program or something like that, which is still around, people are still paying that off from years ago, and it is a program that the state has received more back than what it put in. That would probably be a good consideration to put into a contract like that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, my second question.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, sir. I would like to talk to you more about the first question, but we have time for that. A large portion of the call that my office received has to do with the insurance affordability crisis I'm in South Florida, and we get a lot of calls. Do you have an estimated time as to when we can tell them they can start getting some relief in light of the crisis that they are going through? Because that's the question that we are being asked every day.
You recognize? Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would start by saying that I think everyone walking into the changes that took place last year, we were walking into an experience where we recognized there was no instant lever that could both improve the market for the short term and the long term. And so the changes that were made last year, I think everyone knew was going to take time to be implemented to for the consumer to see that result, for both structurally and just as a matter of the market reacting to those changes in a positive way. I would highlight that we see good news sporadically throughout the, beyond just companies entering the state, we see sporadic good news where there is some rate pressure relief taking place. An example of that would be one company that I'm aware of for their December takeouts is about 43% of their offers are going to be below the Citizens current rate. And so that expresses some long-term confidence is where we're going and where we're going, but it's so hard to give an answer to a consumer of when their rate is going to come down or if their rate's going to come down, because that is an individual person operating within a very large framework.
Representative Fabrizio, you're recognized.
Commissioner, thank you so much for coming here today to us on our first meeting of this committee week session, and thank you for your presentation. I think you've done a heck of a job, not only today, but since you took over. You came into a very difficult situation, and you certainly got right to work, and you've done a heck of a lot. I have a couple of questions, and they all do boil down to what Representative Woodson said, because I do get a ton of calls. I've gone out and I knocked on doors recently, talked to a lot of constituents, and the number one question is, you know, what are you going to do to help bring down or balance premiums in Florida? So that's the question that I've gotten. I'm not going to ask you that question because I think she kind of asked you that question, but I got a couple of things that I want to go over. Very quickly, number one, on page 4 of your presentation, the 28 new full-time, the FTEs that you're bringing into the OIR, where are you as far as in bringing in those employees?
You're recognized.
Thank you. We are right now, OIR is administratively housed within the Department of Financial Services, and so we're working with them to establish those positions, and then they go to DMS. And so there's a bit of a process that we're in the middle of working on getting through at the moment. I think that we will have those positions established. Some of them have been established. Some are still pending. But our goal is to be able to advertise for those positions by the end of the year and then fill them as quickly as we can after that.
All right, very good. If I may, a follow-up.
Yes.
When we passed the list of legislation that you brought up and discussed earlier on over the last couple of years, one of the main factors and the reasons that I was interested in doing that was because it would ultimately bring balance to the market here in Florida. And we did a lot of things, a lot of good things that had been that we had wanted to do for many years, but we got that done for those reasons. And as Representative Woodson indicated, we still haven't really seen it. Last session, we had talked about a time frame, not you in particular, but generally, it had been talked about that there was a time frame of about 12 to 18 months before we were going to start seeing a balance in the markets with premiums and whatnot. And I agree, in light of a lot of the things that have occurred, what we're seeing is indicating of potential good news. In your opinion, Commissioner, did anything occur between the time that we passed some of those bills and the time that they were officially enacted or took effect that would have expanded or increased that 12 to 18 month time frame?
You're recognized.
I think most of the news that we've received has been very positive. And so generally speaking, we saw markets react, the larger insurance world market react in a way that has been pretty positive to the changes. We saw Warren Buffett, for example, we saw reinsurance, him and infuse billions of dollars of capital into the reinsurance market, and he's one that generally, as I understand it, bets on things that are going to be successful over the long term. So most of the news has been good. If I could just take the opportunity to just put a pin on what would have happened in Florida's market, in my opinion, had those changes not been made, and I think it would have been absolutely devastating to Florida's insurance market. We needed something that would give confidence for people to come in and invest in this market and bring capital and provide protection for our consumers.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. And last question, I promise, for today. Do you believe that there was a suit tsunami that occurred? That there was a large set of lawsuits that were filed between the time that we passed the bill and the time that it was enacted that may have had an impact on some of the time frames that we're seeing with some of the rates?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Yes, I think that when we're looking at, we monitor as best we can. Again, aside, thank you to the legislature for providing funds for DFS to modernize its service of process website so we can monitor it better. But we do see an upward trend, a continuing trend in litigation that's taking place. I would also highlight that because the law it was on a particular policy is not effective until renewal, that we have a number for the course of most of this past year, we've had the prior one-way attorney fee statute operating on those particular policies. So it renews on, the law changes for that policy upon renewal. So there was a lot of inventory or stock for the ability for that to happen. And to answer your question a little bit further, I can't believe I didn't think about it before, but the another impact on the cost of insurance within the state is not just a state problem, but a national problem, is the value of homes and what's taking place in that space. So the total insured value goes up with the value of a home, and we've continued to see the value of a home continue to rise.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'll actually take an opportunity to follow up on that comment because there's been clearly a dynamic where properties that are in Citizens are being forced out because of the rise in the value of the home. It's my opinion that depopulating Citizens into other coverage is good policy. Depopulating it simply because of a mathematical effect is not good policy. Do you have any comments on that?
I do. I think that, so we've declared, the insurance commissioner has declared Monroe County and Miami-Dade County to be areas with limited competition, and so that $700,000 cap, it does not exist in those counties. We're considering it for other counties along the East Coast that may be in a similar situation that just cannot find coverage in the private market. One of the challenges we're having in making that determination, and something we may bring forward later this year, is we can only look at the competitive nature of an area based on the county level data. So when we're talking about, for example, Broward County, we see competition, we see competitive activity in that market generally, but what I suspect is going on, if you just take that county, is if you're going east of Flagler Road, you have practically no competition taking place. West of Flagler Road, you have a good number of competitors acting in that space. So I think the $700,000 limitation on Citizens was implemented, I want to say in 16 or 14, I can't remember exactly when it was implemented, but that law, that it's not a particularly bad risk for Citizens to have. And so we're going to be in that competitive space where, as legislators, I think we, and myself, because I do have the power to declare these areas, we're going to be in a space where we have to balance out the interests of depopulating Citizens against affordability and availability for homeowners. And so that's a discussion that I'm happy to have. I think it's a worthwhile discussion to have. It's just one that, if I make the decision, I want to make sure we have some data around it.
Thank you. Ranking Member Anchovsky.
Thank you, Chair. Commissioner, thank you so much for being here. And I also appreciate the work you're doing and acknowledge that you've only been in the position since March. So I do have a series of questions, if that's okay.
You're recognized for a series of questions.
Thank you, Chair. You know, everybody's getting hit. You can't go anywhere without hearing about property insurance as soon as somebody hears you serve in the state legislature. We additionally had the condo law that's adding fees for reserves. And the condos are getting hit, the ones in my district, anywhere from 50% increases to 100%+ increases year over year, which is really causing an affordability issue. And having family in the state of Massachusetts, their housing prices are going up, but they are not having near the increases, not even close to the increases that we're having in property insurance. But I've had some residents who have an older home. Specifically, they redid the roof. They paid for it themselves. The insurance did not pay for it back in 2010. And they were having massive issues finding affordable insurance. Their insurance had gone up from $4,700 to $5,800 to $8,200. And what the average age of the homes in Florida is about 34 years. So the question is, what additional measures would you and your office recommend to the legislature so that my constituents with these older homes can insure their homes not only at an affordable rate, but also not be forced into citizens?
You recognize?
I think there's a couple of things that come to mind immediately when you ask that question. I think one of the first ones is the mitigation steps. Are the mitigation steps that Florida has in place today for wind mitigation or other mitigation, is it enough to merit the advancement of technology? And that's a question that I'm hoping to be able to partially answer with the study that is upcoming, to see if we can identify additional things that can be done as a homeowner to bring those costs down. Unfortunately, that's not something that will impact things today. We don't have that readily available today to do today. I just generally would encourage any consumer that is having trouble with insurance. We have many, many, many fine insurance agents throughout the state. I would not be afraid to shop around for your coverage wherever you can. Some have access to different things. If they're having trouble, please do shop around for your insurance product. The legislature, I think if you just look at the past with Citizens, for example, there's been this grappling with whether Citizens is a pure insurer or last resort, or the 2006, 2007, there's some language that was inserted in there around affordability and some other things that kind of changed the picture of what exactly Citizens is meant to be. I think that that's a discussion that is perfectly appropriate for the public square, but I don't have an answer for what that consumer can do today, other than perhaps if they don't have something, go to mysafefloridahome.com and see if they qualify and get into that program to further harden their home and receive a discount.
They did do that. They did.
They did.
Yeah, they did do that. Separately, reinsurance. What is your office looking at in reinsurance to really gauge whether or not we're in a healthy place regarding reinsurance? Because that seems to be also one of the big drivers in the insurance costs.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I would not say we're in a healthy place. We are in a healthier place than we were in the prior year. And so getting to a healthy place, there's a lot of things the state can do, which a lot of things the state has done in the past and did this past year. The creation of the CAT fund was partially to provide balance in the reinsurance market. The reality is that is a global market that is regulated by various international agreements, and it is not something that the state of Florida itself can directly impose onto the ultimate arrangement of reinsurance. But what I can tell you is, in both the data we saw from, we do three data calls when it comes to reinsurance. We're the only state in the country that does that. And we saw the improving trends within the data call shows that there was more availability this past year than there has been in the past several years, at a better price than there has been for the past several years. So it's a further indicator, again, that we're moving in the right direction. But when you talk to companies who are offering reinsurance, the bottom line is that they're still waiting, like everyone, I think, to see the proof in the pudding, so to speak, to see that end result where this is truly a healthier market, and that's going to take time to be able to demonstrate.
Thank you, Chair. And you mentioned about companies that took over policies from Citizens, and then the increase was 300%, and now you're capping that at 40%. Is there any way for the people who didn't know to opt out and who were charged that exorbitant kind of price gouging type rate for them to get reimbursement for the difference between the 40% and the 300%?
You recognize?
I don't know if there's a way for reimbursement. I know what Citizens is doing is they are reaching out to consumers who were impacted, who received those sorts of offers, and they are offering them back into Citizens. So any unearned portion of the premium would be returned to the policyholder at that point.
You recognize?
Thank you. And then one of the things we did in 2022 was the Florida Optional Reinsurance Assistance Program, FORA. And I believe we put $1 billion, $2 billion? $2 billion was the wrap, I thought. Was it?
Two as well, yeah.
How many companies took advantage of that? And how much of this reinsurance was purchased? And the reason I ask is to see how much of a help it was.
You recognize?
Thank you, Chair. I believe three companies initially went into the program. I think two ended up taking the program funds, and so that would be the participation level. I don't have handy the amount of money that each of those took, so I'd have to get back to you on that particular question. But that I think that's the answer, or I missed part of your question.
How much? How much of the reinsurance was purchased?
I'd have to. That's okay. I think okay. I would have to get back to you okay. on the exact
Thank
amount.
You. That was it, Chair. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Franklin, recognized.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and also thanks for your leadership in this space, and more so, thanks for your courage to lead in this space. I had a few questions around, you talked about us really prioritizing a good mix between regional companies and national companies, and you know, if I look at myself as a national company, and I have, of course, what they call internal rate of returns, I need to make a return on my investment on, how do we have a market to incentivize those folks to be willing to invest in Florida, which is kind of a riskier market? We have hurricanes, even though litigation is going down, we still have hurricanes. When I could invest my money somewhere else where those natural disasters aren't as prominent.
You're recognized.
That's such a great question, and that's partially what I've been trying to have those discussions to figure out what are the other pieces that are missing. I think if you're a large national company, what you look for generally in the insurance space is a fair playing field where the rules are known over a long period of time, and it is a sustainable, there's a sustainable pathway to make some level of return on your investment. And so I think one of the things that is definitely, when you talk to the companies, they will tell you directly that one of the biggest drivers of pulling them away from Florida has been the social inflation or litigation environment, where they've got a lot of capital that they can deploy in a lot of places, and they aren't beholden to any particular state. And so you can see that now where, to a different extent, as these companies, and they're all sort of reshaping their national map to an extent. And there's a lot of if you're a nerd like me and you pay attention to this stuff, you can see where they're moving their capital from one state to another, and they're doing that because it's the property insurance game is just changing generally, along with the reinsurance game. But one example I would point out to directly is what's going on in California right now, where and I've actually talked to the California commissioner a number of times about what they're experiencing. 3 to 4, depending on how you look at it, of the major national carriers have just pulled out of California due to the untenable risk and the regulatory environment and some other elements that are there. And you see California trying to respond to that in various ways with some stuff that Florida has tried, although they've made the statement they don't want to do anything Florida has ever done. But we'll see. We'll see if that works. Because we've done a lot of really good things, and I think that's lost on people. And I make that point when I meet with the national carriers. Is there's a point that you can look at what Florida has done over the decades, and it's been ground. We were the first ones that experienced this kind of trouble, and for all the things that we've done that maybe did not work as expected, we've done some tremendous things that have been remarkably successful. When it comes to the CAT fund, it stabilized and created a more competitive environment against the global reinsurance market. When you talk about Citizens had $8 billion on hand 7 years ago, as we began to fall into this crisis, where they could grow and absorb any provide cover for policyholders that did not have that cover. And it prevented, in any other state where this type of situation had occurred, it would have greatly impacted the greater economy to a degree that you guys would probably be up here several times a summer for years. And so we've done a lot of really, I mean, the Modeling Commission, other work that Florida has done that the legislature has done with the support of governors and others has really been groundbreaking. And I think with this latest reform that has taken place with litigation, we've moved from being the sort of the back end when it comes to litigation in this space to the bleeding edge of moving forward in that space. So I've definitely highlighted that to companies, and we're just going to continue the conversation and see where we go with it. If there are administrative things that the Office of Insurance Regulation can do that is fair to everybody, but increases in interest in the state, then we'll do that. If we see things that one or more of them come to us and say we'd like to see this legislatively changed and it's fair to everyone, we'll probably bring it forward because it's a great discussion to have, and it's one we need to have.
Follow up.
Yep. Thank you so much for that answer. My next question is around, is there anything that you think we should consider doing or maybe kind of pushing pause to kind of see how all of these recent laws impact the market, or should we still look at things like how can we continue to try to stabilize the reinsurance markets? Like, what can we do to try to incentivize those investments in dollars in this market?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think just looking at the picture of where we are, where we stand today, we've just enacted major changes within the insurance industry around tort reform, but also around a lot of other, if you look at, there's a lot of threads going out in all kinds of directions within the property insurance market, the auto market, other markets. So and we are at a year where, I'm knocking on wood really hard, where I'm hopeful that we won't see a major impact from a storm, so that'll give some companies some time to do some, to build up reserves and do other things. And it would be good to be able to be in a place where we can see that play out. And so we've got a CAT fund that has definitely been weakened, but is not necessarily in a urgent need of a capital infusion. We've got Citizens that has also been weakened, but and we're seeing depop take place. So it would probably be a good year to look at, in my view, to let that play out. I think some stuff around educating consumers about, just for example, the pie chart type of scenario, and helping consumers understand what it is that they're paying for when they're writing that premium check. That there's this perception out there that every insurance company is this unlimited pile of cash, and you've paid 19 years to one company, and they've held it for you for when the day you need it. But that's not really what insurance is. It's a year-over-year contract where you are agreeing to offset your risk to this company in an agreement to pool that risk and pay for other people who have losses that year. And so I think there's some work that we could do in that space this year that would be really good.
Thank you. Members, we have 6 more people in the queue. We have 25 minutes. Just bear that in mind. Rep. Steele, you're recognized.
Thank you. I actually just said, God, I hope he calls me right now. So thank you for all the outstanding work you've done. I just challenge us here on this committee and you as well to think outside the box. Like right now we're talking about just continuing the same status quo and trying to get more people to come in. We ought to think about different product lines, like an HSA for a home, you know, a home savings account that allows you to build the nest egg so that you become your own insurance company and you're not going to commit fraud against yourself, you know, and have a roof leak that wasn't there. You're gonna maintain your own house. So I just want you to think outside the box, and thank you for what you've done.
You recognize if you would like to make a response.
I think thinking outside the box is a really good idea. I think we've had discussions about some sort of, just internally, about some sort of something like an FSA or HSA. The trouble we get into is what's the win at the federal level with an HSA or FSA is that you get the tax deduction. So it would take some sort of, we'd have to think about what taxes we could leave in exchange. But it's the concept of offering some sort of credit or some sort of benefit to consumers for hardening their home with some sort of FSA or HSA is a really good concept. We've struggled internally with the buy-in for the consumer.
Thank you. You recognize?
Like couple that with like a catastrophic fund. So there's still an insurance policy that covers them,
right,
but they're saving up to cover their own home.
Right.
And I know that you're not gonna get the tax write-off, but it at least allows them to build that up.
You recognize?
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Redmond, you recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Commissioner. Again, I know it's a thankless job. Thank you for being here. I'm going to speak very softly because I want to save my voice for this evening. And so I get the same questions in District 3 that Rep. Woodson gets, and I want to share my answer. I want to share what I tell my constituents. I'd like your comment on whether you agree or disagree with the analogy. So I remind my constituents that I've lived through one insurance crisis in the state of Florida. It was the medical malpractice insurance crisis of the late 1990s. Matter of fact, I was a resident at Halifax Medical Center in Daytona Beach, and my own residency program in Florida told us, you will probably not be able to practice in the state because a family practitioner will not be able to afford your malpractice premiums. So I was told to look for jobs in Mississippi, Alabama, or Georgia. Now, this was back in the late 1990s. By the time I opened my own practice in 2005, this legislature had taken appropriate action. And the action they took was very similar to Senate Bill 2A, the same action we took back in our special session 2022. We went after frivolous lawsuits. We did significant tort reform. And so what I tell my constituents, I tell them, look, those changes benefited me, but they didn't benefit me in 6 months. They didn't benefit me in 1 year. They benefited me in about 4 or 5 years because now my malpractice premium is not even the biggest bill that I pay out of my expenditures. So
I was wondering if you think that's an appropriate analogy for the fix that we put in place in 2022, and there is light perhaps at the end of the tunnel. It's just not going to be an immediate light, correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I think that's a great analogy to utilize to show where something becomes unbalanced within a space around litigation or other things, and it eventually restores. Once there is state intervention to fix that, you have a cycle where you can see restoration of a more normal business cycle. I think another comparator could be workers' comp, where there's on my desk right now is a reduction for another 15.9% in the workers' comp area overall. So I think you can definitely see improvement over time following legislative action.
Representative Benjamin, you're recognized.
Thank you, Ranking Member. Thank you, Chair. Along those same lines, doctors get to opt out. They don't have to have malpractice insurance. We, as homeowners, have to, if you're financing your home, you have to have homeowners insurance. So we've given homeowners insurance, we've given a 12 to 18 month period where we've told homeowners that they may see a reduction. But I'm at a loss as to what we've done as folks come into the marketplace and they are worrying about IRR and their rate of return and how much money they're making. How do we ensure that those savings or any savings gets passed on to the consumer? What guarantees that we just created a market at this level of pricing? And so that we never actually get any relief, we're just now used to this pricing.
You recognize?
So I'd point to two things if I could. Senate Bill 7052, with specificity, required insurers, when they make their filing, to begin demonstrating any savings realized from prior actions within the legislature, the legislature has taken. So it has to reflect those changes as they come along. And so that will be accounted for within their rate. The other thing I would just point to more generally is I fully hear you on consumers having to wait for relief in the property space. A lot of folks that are trying to get into the state or trying to buy their first home or their second home or their retirement home and live out the sunset of their lives, I completely hear you. It is a very difficult market for consumers right now, for everyone. All of us are consumers. It's tough. The other thing I would just point to along that same vein, though, is that I have an obligation when it comes to rate making in the state of Florida. And that is that I, broadly speaking, there's a lot of obligations, but the broadest one around rates particularly is contained within statute 627042, I think, that requires me to set rates, establish rates that are not inadequate, excessive, or unfairly discriminatory. So if we see the idea that this will become the new normal just for the sake of it is not something that I can allow to happen because of the statutes, nor would I allow it to happen. And so if there is actualized reduction in the cost of delivering the product of insurance in the state of Florida, I will make sure that that is reflected in the rate.
Follow up?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. We have some ADR products that we offer to public. Have you looked at how do we improve those ADR products or add to them as another source of ensuring that now that we don't have one-way attorney's fees, ensuring that the consumer has some protection or some advocacy with regards to their claims.
You recognize?
Thank you, Chair. I think ADR is primarily managed by the Department of Financial Services, the CFO, so I don't want to step into that space too far, but I do recognize that starting with Senate Bill 76, I think there were some mechanisms designed to improve that process and move people in the right direction. I think it definitely deserves a continued look by the legislature to see the effectiveness of it.
Thank you.
Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a few questions. First of all, Commissioner, thank you for stepping in at the worst possible time when you could have easily done something different. So I do appreciate, you coming in when we were at a crisis point with this. And I enjoyed spending some time with you yesterday. I wanted to raise the issue that you and I discussed yesterday about some of the business impacts that I'm starting to see from some of my constituents. So one of the things that I recently had a recent meeting with bankers who told me that the insurance affordability issues are impacting consumers that they're trying to close loans with, that they can't close those loans. And on top of that, They're looking at something called deforest place loan protection, which is what now consumers are opting to purchase, which is frightening because that is only covers the banknote. It doesn't cover equity, nor does it cover the actual property. So my question is, in as much as we're housed together at OIR and banking and Department of Financial Services are housed together, what can we do to look at that and make sure we're doing better in that respect? What are we doing to address that?
You're recognized.
I would advise any consumer that's making a choice between forest place and a traditional insurance product to steer as far away from forest place as possible. To hear that consumers are making that choice, that is a very difficult thing to hear because it is not a good option for them, and it is generally a very historically extraordinarily expensive product to have placed upon you, and that's typically what happens is it's placed upon you because you don't have insurance, and so if that would be very concerning. I also, one of the things that does happen in some of these spaces with property insurance is the homeowner will obtain a quote from an insurer for insurance, and the bank ultimately decides whether or not that product is adequate or not for that coverage, because the bank is always going to cover the risk that they have. And so I think it's a symptom of the larger problem that we've had in Florida for several years, and we're just seeing it emerge in a new area.
You recognize?
Follow up, Mr. Chair. Thank you. So can the OIR provide some advisory on that so that consumers don't fall prey to that product?
You recognize?
We will.
Okay. Follow up, yes. Second question. So thank you, Mr. Chair. We also spoke yesterday about the commercial and property insurance. I'm hearing from commercial properties, mostly in my district, we have outside of state government and universities, it's mom and pops, right? So, and in particularly in my rural areas, it's mom and pop businesses. Their property insurance is going through the roof as a result of all of this. And I realize that's part and parcel of all of this, but what's the answer there? Is it the same answer as the homeowner insurance? Or is there anything else we can do? Thank you.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. In the commercial market, you have all the potential challenges that Florida's market has, but you don't have those buffers like Citizens to provide some level of cover. So you have that additional challenge. A lot of that cover is provided by surplus lines carriers. And so that will be one of the things with that is that they have much more flexibility on markets they enter, much more flexibility on markets they leave. One of the things I would say is that they will probably be, that'll be closer to the, as soon as they begin to see improvement that is meaningful, those companies will come back in. And I'd also just contextualize it on a national level that since COVID, commercial insurance has been in a bit of a fluidic space nationally. It's not just particularly Florida, but COVID upset and caused an analysis of everything from liability around commercial insurance associated with acts of God and other things to cause that capital kind of be moved around and redeployed throughout the country. So it's not just a Florida problem. It just, unfortunately, is exacerbated by the situation we find ourselves in.
Mr. Chair, my last question. Thank you. So this is a different subject. First of all, yesterday when you and I were talking about the Modeling Commission, I find it remarkable that Florida is the only state in the nation to do that. And I think that we should get a little pat on the back that we're doing that. However, given the reinsurance model is global, the reinsurance market is a global market, and we have things such as fires in California, and we have tornadoes, and we have tsunamis, and we have cyclones, and we also have things other than hurricanes. Can we make a recommendation that other states in our country do this modeling commission so that I feel like sometimes we're bearing a bigger risk because of the modeling that we do as a result of what the reinsurance market does? It just seems that's something I think that we'd like to, we should recommend. And so that's not necessarily a question, but something, can we make that recommendation and how do you think it would be received?
You're recognized.
So there's a lot going on in the modeling space right now. There are new models emerging. The National Association of Insurance Commissioners is establishing some baseline rules around modeling and perhaps trying to enter that space in a new way. Florida absolutely does deserve a pat on the back, not only for the modeling commission. One thing I failed to mention was the public model. And so Florida, through OIR, with Florida International University, funded by the legislature, is the only state in the country that also has its own catastrophe model, which is a pretty big operation to establish and maintain. And that gives us, at the Office of Insurance Regulation, it gives a lot to the state with the wind tunnel and other things, but it gives us, with the Office of Insurance Regulation, the ability to analyze whatever model the company has put forward. We have another model that we know really well how that's running that we can instantly compare those various assessments to. So that's another thing that Florida definitely deserves recognition for. But there is a lot of energy around regulating those models better nationwide. I will say that a lot of states, there goes the button. That might be the sign for me to get out of here. But Florida, a lot of states look to what Florida does with the modeling commission to decide what it's going to do. There are a few states out there that have California, just by order, after years of rejecting models, now suddenly is allowing models. And so they were one of the last holdout states that didn't allow them all. But a lot of states look to Florida and the modeling commission to decide how they're going to receive those models.
Rep. Stevenson.
Thank you, Chair. You've kind of gotten into my question about reinsurance, and I'm not sure it's fair to say this, but it's my perception, but do you think that you know, having the cat fund is, although a company can come and go when they have losses, they're not making a long-term contract with a single homeowner, they're taking one-year risk, but the cat fund and Citizens are our ways of stabilizing the market when things are really bad, because that's why we started them, because when things were bad, the money left. And I want to just say this because I'm one of the last people, I think, that was here they wanted to come and kind of diminish the cat fund because we'd had these good years. And, you know, you need a rainy day fund for when it rains, and you need a cat fund when you're in a bad run. Weather has been a real reason driving our rate increases as part of it. As you called it, what was it, social inflation, which is the when litigation costs are exceeding economic inflation. Those are a number of factors, but that is part of stabilizing. And sometimes I think about it like they've got our money and they took a one-term deal, but cat fund helps because it holds some capital here for when the one-year contract people leave. Fair? Is that fair?
Yeah. You're recognized.
It is.
And I have one other small.
You're recognized.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair. Do the Super Bowl insurance companies rely as much on reinsurance as the smalls?
You're recognized.
Generally, no, would be the answer. It would depend on each individual company. And I would just, there are, what's in most of the cases of the large national companies, what you have is what we call a pub company that sits underneath that national company, so it has the access to the capital of the higher end company, but their individual reinsurance profile might be adjusted by that, but the answer generally would be no.
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. No, I don't have any others. I appreciate the work and the challenge that our citizens are having, because they have, as other members have pointed out, we have to have our citizens have to have, many of them have mortgages, and they must have this insurance. So I appreciate your work, and I don't know if there's anything, I would be interested in knowing, are we seeing more wind or more water damages now? But I would take that as another time, so thank you.
Are you ready? Would you like to respond to that?
I'd be happy to have that discussion.
Rep. Woodson for the second time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I really appreciate it. And Commissioner, thank you so much. I really believe that you are doing your best in light of this nightmare you inherited. I would not like to be in your shoes. I have one last question for you, and it has to do with the condominium owners. I know Rep. Honchowski slightly touched on it. We passed the bill. Condominiums owners, we have a lot of the seniors in our state who have worked all their life and buy those little condos And now they have to come up with reserve funding, which is not, you know, to their own fault. And also they have to have insurance. And this is not just in my district, this is throughout the state, but I have met with a lot of those seniors, different groups, and they are crying for help. We passed the law. Is there anything that you can do? I would really, really appreciate you giving this one specifically to the condominium owners. Is there anything that can be done to ensure that they have access to insurance? And also, what can we do to give them a relief on the reserve funds that they are obligated to come up with in such a short notice when they did not have any saving to address that? I would really appreciate your comments on that. And I'm willing to work with you on that one. This is very, very important.
You recognize?
It's so some of it is symptomatic of all the things we've discussed today. I would say that, again, over the long term, the rules and requirements around reserving and the way that those condo entities function will eventually lead to a more positive outcome on the insurance side of things, because that is responding to things that have happened in Florida that were unfortunate and unexpected. And so when we're looking at that from an insurance perspective, the unexpected things add to cost and risk and less availability. And so Florida's demonstrating that these condos have rules over the long term that are followed, and there is reserving in place, and that there is maintenance and other things in place that is being conducted on a regular basis will provide certainty, again, to the insurance market that area is not something that they have to think about. Again, that's long-term, short-term, shorter-term. I think that we need there's not an immediate lever to provide that relief to access to the condos, unfortunately. I think that looking at the mitigation efforts that we're talking about, there are some things out there that I would like to look into on the condo front that we haven't necessarily done when it comes to things that might be cheap but effective around structural stability and monitoring of that and some other things that may be helpful in the midterm, but it's going to take time for this to work out.
Ranking member for a concise question.
Thank you, Chair. And just to go back, and this is kind of building on what Representative Steele was saying. I mean, I heard before Andrew, it was just wind coverage that the state of Florida did. Then with Andrew, we had Citizens, which is socialized property insurance of last resort, where we're all at risk. What are you thinking of if you had a magic wand that we could do to make sure we don't get into this situation again from an insurance perspective where rates are doubling year over year and the legislature's just trying to keep up to help the citizens of Florida?
Commissioner, you're recognized, but we have 3 minutes left.
That's almost a blessing. What a great question. So if I could do anything I wanted, what would I do? There are some things that we've kind of got on the back deck that I've had developed over the past 8 months, that if we got into a really difficult situation, what would it look like? What could be some things the state could do? I don't think we're at that point at this point, but I think there should be some long-term conversation around the CAT fund, not only ensuring that's adequate, but maybe meeting the moment that the reinsurance market is having to do things. That's a worthwhile discussion to have. I think the bottom line, though, is that like the efficiency of insurance, just in general in Florida, but I think nationally, it's going to have to get much, much more efficient over time. And that's from that's all those things in that pie chart. Everything is going to have to get better and better and better. It's going to be more relevant in Florida, but it's going to become a national issue where the capital just isn't necessarily going to be available to the extent that it has been in the past due to population growth and a bunch of other things. And so, like, the companies that come into the state have to accept that they're going to have to operate very efficiently, and they're going to have to be machines that can adjudicate and settle claims in a fair and efficient manner very quickly. The third-party elements of insurance, which has been addressed largely with the passage of the bills taken last year, insurance in Florida is not a space where you can have a third party that is greatly profiting off of the business of insurance. It's going to have to be this very quick, efficient thing. So I'd have to think around that space, really, for the opposite thing.
Members, thank you for the great questions and participation today. Commissioner, That is the most informative, comprehensive, helpful, transparent presentation that I've seen in the 4 years that I've served on this committee, 3.5 so far. So thank you very much for your service to the state. Thank you for your very detailed presentation today. I think it's been enormously helpful for us. So let us know how we can help you going forward.
Thank you, Chair. Appreciate it. Yeah.
Members.
The first year is the best year.
Yeah. That concludes our agenda. Representative Botana moves. We rise without objection. We're adjourned.